So hello everybody. Last week, a number of you were here and quite a number of you were not here. But last week we looked at the interrelatedness of awakening and meditation. I'd like to go a little bit further with that theme and take some different angles. And again, just a little bit of a review there from last week. We looked at equanimity, the quality of non-reactivity, responsiveness, balance, or equipoise as a base for not just meditation, but for awakening. In equanimity, there's a kind of a stillness. It's not tranquility. Tranquility and equanimity are two different things. Tranquility is stillness. Equanimity is equipoise or balance. So with meditation, when I use the term meditation, I'm basically referring to the capacity that we all have within us to witness without any interference whatsoever. Without interfering with what's occurring, there's a capacity to simply watch. Simply be witnessing. As that witnessing takes place, that watching without interfering, that's meditation. What arises there, sooner or later, is the sense that things are just unfolding and just occurring spontaneously. That's what life is. Life is spontaneously unfolding. And your personal experience, so to speak, is no exception. Your personal experience, even as you may feel or believe or assume that you're making certain choices and these choices bring about certain results, and I am doing this or I'm doing that, even those kinds of processes are spontaneously occurring things. Okay, when I say spontaneously, we have a sense of what it feels like to be spontaneous. You can think of it as like not planned. Yeah, one doesn't sort of think it out ahead of time. The spontaneous occurrence just happens. We think of it in music as the improvisation. We think of it in dance as the dance began to dance itself. You know? Sometimes when a person is singing, they feel this happen where this spontaneity comes through. Sometimes you might be writing something down and you actually stop sort of organizing the process and it just sort of comes out. It's not like you're necessarily channeling something, although you could say, you know, you're sort of channeling spontaneity, you see. But even all the moments where you feel that you're not being spontaneous, where you're organizing what you're going to say, you're thinking it through ahead of time. In fact, you might be spending a lot of time setting up a talk that you're going to give, for example, or that you're going to speak to somebody about something. That's happening, even as you think you're organizing it, is happening spontaneously. You see, so there's nothing happening here that isn't happening spontaneously. Now, as that's realized, okay, what occurs specifically in the context of the meditation, is that there's a great relief. There's a resting into that which is happening. In a certain sense, you actually experience that you stop meditating from the perspective of, I am meditating. And so the shift there is a shift into meditation is just happening. Things are just happening. You could say they're happening within a context of stillness. You see, notice right now, regardless of what's happening inside of your sense of yourself, notice that what's around is still and peaceful. The fan is turning, yes, and there's a sound of a refrigerator in the background. to just notice that there is, in a way, peace all around. There's space all around. What happens in the meditation is that which is perceived to be out there, if there is a sense of that space or peace, and some people don't notice this because they're too busy noticing what's happening inside. They're too busy absorbed with what's occurring inside their brain, inside the body, what they're going to do, the actions that they're engaged in, which is a wonderful thing. It's wonderful to be completely with what you're doing when you're eating or, you know, chopping a vegetable or, you know, whatever it might be that you're doing. It's a wonderful thing to experience mindfulness, fullness of attention in the activity of body and mind. Again, a wonderful relief, because what happens is mindfulness, fullness of attention, is gracefulness. Okay, you actually experience something about what grace really is. Mindfulness, fullness of attention, is graceful. And with that comes a very often warm and pleasant feeling of satisfaction and contentment, of ease, of resting into the activity. Because you're nowhere else, you see. Your attention, your mind, your body comes together, and there's a sense of presence. There's no past, there's no future. Thoughts can still arise, but they don't disrupt the sense of gracefulness that's happening. What meditation does is it allows that to flower more fully. It allows that to flower more fully, let's say, in the context of sitting meditation. Discovering the capacity to simply sit and to drop, you might say, into stillness. It's very difficult to actually discern the difference between stillness and silence, even though they're actually two different things. That's why there's two different words. If it was one thing, we'd probably just have one word for it, although the Eskimos have, what, 40 different names for snow? Or 30, something like that. Why do they have so many names for snow? Is it just because of the different personalities of the different people who came up with the words? How about because it expresses itself differently? Silence expresses itself sometimes as stillness. Stillness expresses itself sometimes as silence. So how do you express yourself? What self or yourself is expressing itself in any given moment? The meditation hooks you up to this. It hooks you up, gets you inside this flow of what you could call yourself. It's fine to consider it like that or to think of it like that, recognizing, of course, that that's a view that's there that says, this is myself. You see, all we have to do is be in a relationship with another person, one other person, and begin to actually enter into that relationship with that other person, to enter into that conversation. Maybe there's something to be worked out. Maybe there's a feeling of connectedness. Maybe there's a love. Maybe there's a liking. There's a friendship. There's a whatever. And the sense of who you are organically changes as you're in relationship with just one other person. You are affected. You are influenced. You are altered, appropriately so. Because what we call ourselves, right, is an active, ever-changing process. There's no disagreement about this in any kind of a system or, you might say, a theoretical frame about what is the self of a human being. The self of a human being is a changing process, an ever-changing process, a flow of changing experiences, changing elements, changing objects, call it whatever you will. When we try to fix upon something, whether it be in a relationship, in a situation, or within ourselves, and we try to fix upon anything, and we try to stick to that or hold to that, what we experience is that that's impossible. Even the repeating of a certain experience is impossible. You ever notice this? Like, for example, maybe you hear a song, you really like the song, and so you want to hear it again. So you play the song again. Someone gave me this CD of this young rock band. Usually I'm not too keen on rock music lately. But they gave me a CD, and the first song was like, you know, it was working okay. The second song, they just like hit something. The lyrics were stupid. I mean, they just really, they meant nothing. It was kind of like, you're there with your hands in your pocket, you're shy, you can't say what you want. You know, these lines like this, which actually happens to all of us, right? Have you ever been there? You know, you're like this. You don't know where to put your arms. Pablo Neruda, the Chilean poet, has this poem about this. You know, where people don't know where to put their arms. So they're moving their arms around. It really says a lot about like how you're feeling. Anyways, the song goes on, and it's like it just all of a sudden it hits this place where the heart engages, and this feeling of like kind of love comes up. So the song completes, you know, and when the heart engages, right, the eyes engage, okay? Because these are connected. They're not just connected to the brain, they're connected to the heart, unless that connection has been interrupted or inhibited, and it gets inhibited sometimes. So people's gut, people's energy center down below the gut, people's heart gets severed or disconnected to some extent from their eyes. Meditation hooks all this back up again if it's been somewhat disrupted. Although you could call it the channels of energy, it hooks them back up again so that the energy flows. So the eyes had some tears in them. The song ended. Lunch was served. And during lunch, the thought of the song was there. And there was an interest to go back. So next thing you know, I find myself going back and clicking on the CD again and finding song number two, because I remember song number one was, but song number two clicked. I went back and listened to song number two. And if you've ever done anything like this, it doesn't have to be with a song, it could be with anything. Would you say those words to me again? I just want to hear you say that to me again, Torsten says to the other person. I want to run down that path again. I want to go back to that place that I've been to. That was such a beautiful place. I want to stand on that mountaintop, that special spot. I'm going to climb up in that tree. I'm going to look across the water again, and again, and again, and again. You can't repeat anything. As much as we might try, all we could do at very best is get an approximation. Why? Because the spontaneity, the originality, the power of the true organicity of life, of the Dharma, is constantly rearranging it. That's so beautiful to actually get a sense of that happening right here and everywhere else. No separation, no exception, all inclusive. Now with the stillness, you see, because it's a very good thing to learn how to move gracefully. It's not just for the Baryshnikovs or the Nureyevs. Yeah. Or the Nadia, what was her name?
Kamenichi.
Thank you. Yes. Before she got hurt. But this gracefulness that we see amongst people, yeah, everybody moves with grace when they're moving with presence. When that attentiveness is connected to what the body's doing. Okay? It doesn't matter whether you've got arthritis, doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter how stiff the joints are, doesn't matter how young you are, doesn't matter. What matters is their presence connecting with the activity. Now, you might say, flip that coin, and there's the cultivation of stillness. Yeah, it makes sense to learn to move gracefully. It makes sense to learn to relax into stillness and discover the grace in stillness. Now just notice the stillness that's here. There comes a sense that the body can move and it doesn't disrupt the stillness. Initially there's a sense that, oh, movement is one thing, stillness is another. Mm-hmm. And they're not the same. They're different. That's the mind dividing. One feels different than the other. Okay, what opens up in the meditation is, it's more like a continuum rather than two sides of the same coin. It's more like a continuum. There's stillness and there's movement. And when presence, yeah, attentiveness, links in to both, then there can be movement, and stillness is not disrupted in the movement. And what links that, or what allows that, is that presence. Now notice the presence. And notice that the presence is still, and it's silent. And, interestingly, it's really not locatable, is it? Where is this presence that's here? It's clearly here. Actually, where is it not? Where is the presence not? No words, right? That's the answer. So with the meditation, I often encourage, probably more common suggestion, or some people call it an instruction, a cue, would be to relax into the stillness. Relax into the silence. And what you find sometimes when invited to relax into the silence is that you might not feel very silent inside. You might not feel very still. And if that isn't judged, if that isn't condemned, there's one thing that we do to ourselves that's probably more detrimental than anything else, and that is we criticize and condemn ourselves. And we criticize and condemn ourselves perhaps more than anybody ever could. However, you may know from your own history that your tendency to criticize and condemn yourself was a learned tendency. You learned this from people who were busy condemning themselves and couldn't contain that, so they condemned you too. You didn't get it from books. You didn't get it from the television. You didn't get it from the trees or the sandbox or the leaves, the air, the sky, clouds, so forth. You got it from other human beings. So if you don't condemn yourself too much for being messed up inside sometimes, then that messed upness is just allowed. And what it does is it reveals its true nature, which is it unfolds itself spontaneously, just like that. Can't know what the time frame will be. And there comes a point in the meditation, in the awakening, time makes no difference. It's this measurement that humanity has made up, linear time. It just goes away, boom. And there's truly a sense, and people have this every single day, and it's often too subtle to be recognized until they've turned towards it and recognize it, of the timeless. What is time happening within? What is the sense of time happening within? It's happening within the timeless. What is the timeless? The timeless is the eternal. Where is the eternal? The eternal is right here, right now. It's not someplace at the end of time. You see? That's a fairy tale. When time ends, then there'll be eternity. At the end of the road of time, the eternal will appear. So another construct that we often see in the meditation very clearly is the construct of progression, the construct of this becoming that, that becoming this, this happened and then that happened and then this happened and then that happened, and it happened in time and it happened in space. Okay, these are constructs, these are views, and they can become something that is actually witnessed, because anything can be witnessed. Four states that we're moving in and out of all day and night long. Waking, dreaming, deep sleep, and witnessing. The witnessing can arise in any of these three, the deep sleep, the dreaming, and the waking. Once you learn and discover how the witnessing infiltrates, you might say, penetrates all aspects of the waking state. Better to call it waking states. Wouldn't it be better to call it waking states? Let's make that plural rather than singular. It's more like states. Then it awakens in the dreaming states. It's called lucid dreaming. You know that you're dreaming and you're still dreaming. And then it pokes through into deep sleep. It's there, yes it is. The witnessing is there. But it's very sublime. Because the witnessing in the deep sleep state is so peaceful. It's so peaceful. It's almost asleep. But it can't be completely asleep, because there would be no recognition of the peace of that deep sleep if there was not wakefulness there. May you all see this tonight. May it come and find you, sneak up on you, when you're busy trying to be completely out of it. Actually, we're not busy usually trying to be completely out of it, but we like to be out of it, especially if the it's been a bit rough. Thank goodness. Have you ever pondered? I used to ponder this as a child. Not only, this came a little bit later, but not only who made up this sex thing, but who made up, how did it come to be that deep sleep has been given? How did this come to be? And of course, the child, if they're hearing things like the Creator, they're hearing the creation or creator stories, the God myth stories. I'm not saying there isn't God, I'm just saying there's a lot of mythology in the name of God. If the child is hearing that, it's very difficult not to consider that what is being heard might be true. It might be true, because it's rare to actually take no external refuge when you're a child. Because you need people to take care of you. As you need them to take care of you, you rely upon them. And if they don't show up, if they're inconsistent, if they don't give you what you need, it hurts. You work it out one way or another, yes you do in most cases, but it's a rougher trip. For a while. At some point, you may hear a teaching like, take no external refuge. Take the truth itself as your refuge. Be a light unto yourself. Wow. What does that mean? What does that mean? For those of you who don't know, that was the last teaching that the Buddha gave before the last breath. That was the final culminating teaching of a 45-year teaching career. Be a light unto yourself. What that could mean is that as the sense of what meditation really is, not what you think it is, not what you thought it was, not what it might be later, but what it is right now. As that light, if you don't mind me putting it that way, as that light, because it's an illumination, as that illumination occurs as to what meditation is right now, awakening is taking place. Awakening in the sense that the light is influencing the so-called darkness. Now, when I use the word darkness here, I simply mean not seeing things clearly. The tendency, conditioned as it is inside most human beings until it isn't there, to ignore the truth. To ignore the truth, not because they're intending to necessarily ignore the truth, although that can arise, but because they don't know how to not ignore. They don't know how to look and see clearly. And so the teachings are given as a light that allows you to begin to see clearly. And what I'm talking about are the things that you can kind of do that help that occur. For example, you can be interested. If you're not interested in that, then notice what you are interested in. Just get very interested in what you're interested in. Get so interested in what you're interested in that you forget about everything else, at least for some moments. And you find the red dot absolutely fascinating. Like the Buddhist monk. Two of them were giving a talk. One was giving the talk. The other was sort of there to be an additional companion, I guess. Turned out he didn't speak English. Two Burmese monks. One's giving a talk. Very terse, didactic, dry. But okay, because it was on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. Great talk. But it was a bit dry for me. I don't know about for others, but for me. This monk over here on the other side couldn't speak English. He played with the microphone the whole time. He took the little rubber thing and started going. Absolutely, it seemed to me, no self-consciousness, no concern that actually when he started doing this, his microphone was turned on. So there was a bit of sound coming through from him rubbing his nose on the microphone to the other monk's talk. They didn't seem to mind a bit. This was part of the teaching. Yes, it was part of the teaching. Some people would say, he's a goon. And then he started going like this. Touching it with his finger. Trying different fingers on it. This went on for a good hour. He played with the little rubbery microphone. And then he put it down and he was done. I mention this story not just because I found it ridiculously funny, and yet it was not going to work to just burst out laughing with this other monk giving this very serious talk. It just wasn't going to flow very well, so I was containing myself from laughing at the monk with the microphone on his nose. It's good he didn't put it in his mouth, right? Why not, though? Huh. See, when you're a little child and go to the beach maybe for the first time and you can crawl and you're out there on the sand and you take your tongue and you go Don't do that, your mother says, your father says, your uncle says, your brother says. Maybe they even smack you on the buttocks or worse because you put sand in your mouth. You figured it out for yourself, didn't you? You didn't need that. This is how you do it. This is how you don't do it. No, you found out. Loud and clear. Sand in your mouth is no fun. I won't do that again, probably. If it was only so easy, and actually it is, but it doesn't seem that way because we've gotten complicated. If it was only so easy to be a light unto yourself, to take the truth as your refuge, to take no external refuge, to stop looking for something somewhere else, in somebody else, in a book, over here, over there, to that place that's so beautiful that you're going to go and spend a bunch of money and time to get back to. Stop looking for what's already here by going there. That's the promise of the meditation. Is that gift of discovery. And in that gift of discovery, there's a falling away to some extent of time, of progression towards, of acquiring something, getting to something. And of course, with that falling away, there's a falling away of needing to get rid of anything. Why? Because that spontaneity, that natural unfolding truth, ephemeral as it is, because what's unfolding right here, okay, all of this, is transitory and ephemeral. It's dissolving right before our eyes. This wonderful peace and rest that comes in that recognition or realization or awakening of the ephemeral transitory nature of everything. It relieves a lot of the problems. And we might say along with that naturally comes equanimity, tranquility, stillness, silence. The understanding that movement and stillness really are just two different words for these, you might say, continuum of experience that human beings have. And is seen that way when presence infuses them both. The good news is you can actually practice this. The whole purpose of the practice is so there's no need to practice. Get that? The whole purpose of the practice is so the practice ends. If the practice ending is realized, the ending of the practice is realized, the practice never even starts. That's not just a Zen moment, as people sometimes say, oh, I had a Zen moment. What does that mean? You have to be very careful because the truth gets watered down very, very easily as our minds get a hold of it, as we think about it, as we talk about it. Pretty soon we might even feel like we don't even know what the truth is, because we've taken ourselves into a whole sort of mental set of constructs about it. And the simple, yeah, originalness of life as spontaneously unfolding. Call it evolution if you like. Call it anything you want. The point is to realize it directly and to experience that. And to realize that the one who's experiencing that is that also. The one who's experiencing that is that spontaneous unfolding reality. both silent and moving. Never one higher or lower, better or worse than the other. So let me pause now and see what you might want to explore. Anything at all that's come up for you.